This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. Just as New York Fashion Week kicked off in September, Pantone announced its colors of the year for spring 2015, making 2014's Radiant Orchid so last year. The company that standardized color reproduction in the 20th century is now the global authority on color for designers and paint manufacturers and fashion's faithful hordes. We have deep-seated associations with color. Think of the indigo dyes that drove trade in the ancient world, the woman in the red dress, Iran's green revolution. The fashionable colors worn throughout history represent more than fads. They project mood and meaning and culture and context. A new book tracks fashion's richly shaded marriage with color for the past 100 years. Leatrice Eisman is executive director of the Pantone Color Institute and co-author with E.P. Cutler of Pantone on Fashion, A Century of Color in Design. Leatrice Eisman, welcome to Word of Mouth.
It's delightful to be here.
So what a job, a life in color. Is this something you've always been drawn to?
Absolutely. I mean, those of us who are drawn to color know that, and you recognize that it started very early in your childhood, where every kid has enjoyment out of playing with crayons. But for me, it was more than that. It was like an addiction. I had to repaint my room every other year, repaint the furniture in the room. Even adults would come to me and ask my opinion about what colors to use together. So it's you know, for anybody who's into color, they completely get it. They can't remember a time when they weren't deeply involved with color.
And you continue to be deeply involved with color, and I'm dying to know about this whole choosing of the color of the year. I mean, is there a conspiracy here? Do you get a secret message from Anna Wintour or Miuccia Prada or Karl Lagerfeld to meet in a cabal and decide what it's going to be?
No, it's not anything like that. I mean, I think there are some who like to believe that, you know, we all have this secret meeting together. But it doesn't work that way. We at Pantone really do our homework in deciding on the color of the year, in that we have to look at many aspects of color. Most importantly, the zeitgeist. You know, what is a feeling that's out there afoot with consumers, with the average person on the street? We have to travel the world, literally looking at influences from all over the world. We look at what movies are in the production line. Is there a color story that's involved with a particular film that's going to get a lot of attention? We look at the world of art, certainly. Is there a big collection that's going to be going around the world? Is it getting a lot of attention? What is the artist that's involved? We look at even sports events. Is the Olympics going to be held in a specific year? What is the host country? What are the team colors? We certainly look at the fashion world because that's hugely important. And at Pantone, we do have a leg up in that we ask the designers to send us illustrations in and of a given season well ahead of time. And then the symbolism of the color is hugely important. What does the color say? You know, what is the psychological message that it gives, and that is that appropriate for a particular time period?
So some predicting, some reflecting, a lot of reflecting, not dictating, which is interesting. You're not telling people what they're going to be wearing. And by the way, what are we going to be wearing in spring 2015?
Well, we see that the mood in spring is definitely one of a kind of a cool, calming, quiet zone, as we call it. We have the four top colors all being in the cooler color family, starting with the aquamarine.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly, scuba blue comes second to that, which is a little bit more vibrant than the aquamarine. And then a color that really has its roots historically going way back, a color called lucite green, which is almost a see-through color. That is, the name implies that it has this very clear, translucent feeling. And we're seeing a lot of that color for spring of next year. And then, of course, there's always the classic blue that absolutely never goes away. Everybody owns something in a classic blue for springtime and summer. And so that's number four. That's not to say that we won't be seeing some warm shades in the spring. Colors like tangerine or custard or even strawberry ice, even though it has a name that implies that's very cool, still has a degree of warmth that's attached to it. So it's a very interesting palette, but led by cool colors for spring of 2015.
I'd love to get to the names, because for one thing, when you're doing this historical survey back to the early 20th century, color was not always apparent in black and white photographs that were used in fashion magazine for much of the 20th century. So where do you find the material speaking of something as specific as color, especially when they're not named as we might name them?
If we look back through the ads, we found that there were catalogs. Even Vogue put out a wonderful fashion publication, not like the Vogue of today, but very elegant. And in the 20s, I found a yellow-green shade that just, I could not believe that this very citrusy, very contemporary-looking color was even available to anybody in the 20s. So it's a learning experience for me, too, as I delve back through the historical aspect of fashion. And that's one of the most fun things about doing this kind of book.
I'm glad you mentioned that about not even knowing that people would wear this color at this time. Because in the introduction to the book, you write about the democratization of color that began in the mid-19th century. What was going on?
Well, it was technology, really, because we know, if we go back really a long time ago, purple was the color that was meant only for royalty. Well, the real reason why the royalty and the people who had a lot of money wore purple and the common person didn't wear purple was all about the economics of purple. Purple was not available as a dye unless you had access, as they did in ancient Phoenicia, to hammer these tiny little mollusks open, get the juice, the extract of those little tiny snails, and accumulate that so that you could dye an entire garment. Well, you can imagine that's pretty labor-intensive. So as a result, only the wealthy could afford to pay for such a garment. Whereas, coming up to the last century, even a little bit before that, purple dye was accidentally discovered in a lab where they saw that this color could be made, and it could be made for far less money. And so the average person could then afford to buy a purple dress. That's what I meant by democratization.
So you also write about what color has come to mean through the ages. Black, of course, the color of mourning for the Victorians. Red, the color of blood and fire and fertility and the life force traditionally. How does color work on us? I mean, it actually stimulates our brain.
No, there's no question of that. There's the psychological and the physiological effect of color. If you can imagine going back to the beginning of time, if ancient people saw, bloodshed or the color of fire, they attached the feeling of danger. I mean, red was something that could not be ignored. It had to be looked at. Now, after centuries of being implanted with that idea, that concept, we know red enters our field of vision. We can't avoid looking at red. Our eye automatically will go to it. Now, it could be a warning signal. Again, it's a red stoplight. There's sexual excitement that comes into play here, too, the red lipsticks. So that there's a various applications of the color, even though, if you go back to the beginning of time, it usually was some connection with color as it appeared in nature. Another example I can give you is sky blue. Why is it that any place in the world, if you show people a little Pantone swatch of sky blue, they will invariably say, oh, it's such a peaceful color. It's so serene. It is a dependable color. It's loyal. These are the kinds of words that we get back in color word association studies that we conduct.
That's why I'm told that politicians wear blue ties.
Exactly. Exactly. That is exactly the message that they want to give across. So, we see that color can be manipulated. People will wear it for specific reasons to give certain messages because they know that most people will regard that color the same way.
Color also gives us a sense of time, like what I like to call that 1930s kitchen green, you know. and there's this bright marigold now associated with Hermès that kind of had its day in the 40s, we read in your book, brought back much later by Carolina Herrera.
Yes.
So how do these colors cycle back? What do you think is going on in our history that brings them back around?
Well, there's numerous reasons for that. But if a color hasn't been prominent for several years, if you do bring it back, and the best example I can give you is avocado green, anybody who was alive in the late 60s and 70s knows that it was used in every plush carpet, in every dishwasher, because that was the all-pervasive color at that time. And you had a different mindset in those days. You had people who really did slavishly follow what everybody else was doing.
I want to pick up something I dropped because you just reminded me of it again. The color names that you come up with at Pantone, you know, blue iris, lavender fog, rose wine, glacier gray, opal, hemlock. Wonderful, wonderful names. How do you do this all together in your secret cabal?
Well, there is kind of a secret cabal that does that. And we do it really because with Pantone, you know, we have over 2,000 names that already have colors. So it gets more and more challenging as we move forward. So you have to be considerate of certain elements. Like if you name a color that is just too timely at a specific time. You know, I can remember when we were doing some purples and somebody came up with Barney Purple. And I said, no. We don't know how long Barney is going to be popular. And if that show bites the dust, there goes Barney Purple. So we nixed Barney Purple.
Thank you.
At the same time, thank you for that. But at the same time, there are some beautiful, beautiful names. I mean, you only have to look at flowers and foliage and, you know, places around the earth and beautiful sights to look at that can give you all kinds of inspiration for color names.
So did you buy Mimosa in 2009 or Radiant Orchid? That's Pantone number 18-3224 this year.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I have to. It's part of my uniform. If I'm going to go out and talk to people, which I do all the time, you know, I travel around the world doing presentations, you know, if I'm going to talk the talk, I have to walk the walk.
Well, Leitra Seisman, I have to ask you, do you just have the best gig? Do you have
I do. I absolutely do. There's no question of that.
Leitra Seisman, Executive Director of the Pantone Color Institute. She's also co-author of the new book, Pantone on Fashion, A Century of Color in Design. It is a rich experience indeed. There's more information on the book at wordofmouthradio.org.